When it all gets too heavy, that's when they come and they go. With only one thing in common, they got the fire down below. Those are the lyrics to Bob Seger's Fire Down Below. And like most of his songs, they don't actually mean anything. From this, we can conclude that everything named Fire Down Below is pointless, including this movie, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm here with two trained assassins. One is wearing all red. The other is wearing a nice light blue. It's Camila Adams.
Hi.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hello.
And Hero. Here's the funny thing. We loved it. It's great. And much like when I saw it 15 years ago, 17 years ago, I'm like, what happened to that movie?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember. It looks cool.
Right.
It's already out of my brain again.
It sure was pretty.
And I don't think there's, you know, I mean, not, you can't always judge. It depends on when the episode drops and everything. But not the most robust social media response to that particular episode. I don't know if Hero is really at the height of the cultural consciousness right now.
Probably should be more than it is, frankly.
Well, it's our 12th favorite movie that we've covered. Lands 12th overall at 79 2/3. That is the same score as Home Alone. The tie is broken in favor of Hero by the 84 points I gave to Hero. That is the highest individual score. So hovering near the top 10 and getting a slight edge over Home Alone. And I'm like, yeah, that seems right. That seems accurate for this movie we've all forgotten. But great numbers for Hero. If you feel like watching that again, you should. It's very high on our list. Seven is still in seventh. While we're talking about the overall numbers, just going to go over our lowest scores. Why am I doing that this episode? You know, no reason. The current lows, the overall lowest score is the 3 that Camila gave Friday the 13th, A New Beginning.
Wow.
Your runners-up are TMNT got an 11 and Private Parts got a 12. Robin's lowest is the 4 for Rob Zombie's Halloween, a 9 for The Hangover Part 2, and a 10 for Chronicle. My lowest is one of them, Transformers. I didn't bother figuring out which one I meant. at a 5, Hangover Part 2, 6, and the other Transformers, an 8. So, having established the low water marks,
wow.
Fire down below. How about this movie?
I have started a new rating system for myself as to where I start off every movie with 50 as I hit play, and it's up to that movie to decide whether we're going up or down.
I like that. That sounds fun. It's like, I don't know if this actually ever happened, but I always saw on TV where it'd be like, come in the mall. It's like, come on, little children in the mall. We're going to put you in a room and you're in a focus group. We've turned the dial. I know they do it on The Simpsons. Sure they did it on other shows. That's what Camila is building into her living room.
I want you to have a big like meter, like above and behind your couch so that you can just
yes.
Like when Steven Seagal plays the guitar, you just reach up and knock it downwards a ways. And
I think the news is just going to be just like throwing Nerf balls. Like I start off with, like, I feel like this was a Nickelodeon game for kids or something where you have like red balls and green balls. And then however many balls I throw at the fucking TV, that's in the numbers. So Wolf.
I had very limited experience with Mr. Seagal prior to this. And it's mainly watching Under Siege, I think, when I was 12. And when you're 12, Under Siege is great. And from what I can tell from the way people rank the Steven Seagal movies, is kind of still the just watch this one and let the rest of this man's life go. But yeah, I remember it's one of the first movies I saw with boobs in it. So that was great. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of kicking. I think he grabs Tommy Lee Jones by the eyes at the end. It's great. It's a good time. Other than that, I think that's the only, you know, Seagal vehicle I've seen. How about the two of you?
This is my first, and I'm starting to understand. Like, he just never was a draw for me, and now I get it. I just kind of stick with my gut feelings about things.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of Steven Seagal movies.
Really?
Like I can't remember the difference between Above the Law and Hard to Kill. I think I've seen both of them, and I think that one of them is good and one of them is kind of iffy, but still, you know, scratches the particular itch that it's meant to scratch. So I saw those like when I was a child, way before I should have seen them. And I loved Under Siege when it came out, and I recently watched it again during quarantine, and I do think it holds up. And I remember also watching like some of his, Sean will tell us in the facts, but I'm pretty sure that this is like the end of the like Steven Seagal when he was maybe kind of slightly not just entirely a joke. Ends with Fire Down Below. And I have seen some of those post Fire Down Below direct-to-video ones as well. And I have also become deeply fascinated with this horrible, horrible man and all of the details of how horrible he is. I spent a lot of time reading up on Steven Seagal last night, and yikes.
Oh, man. Yeah, I couldn't. I knew that there was something problematic with him, but I
there's like 15 different things, so and much. They are all in conflict.
Oh, my. Oh, wow.
Because we're going to get to that, I mean, my main takeaway is he's terrible. He's a terrible actor in such a unique and interesting way because he's so calm and assured and confident and relaxed with being terrible.
Right.
Like, you think of some of the other, like, action stars that can't really act, like Jean-Claude or
Chuck Norris, who we've discussed both on the pod.
Right.
And in both cases, like, they're bad, but they're trying hard. Like, right. Seagal is bad, and he's happy to be there.
He's just like, fuck it. I don't know. And this fact that it's like, I can't hear anything you're saying. I need you to speak up a little bit. Can we get above a whisper?
Diction.
Right.
Well, before we get into the facts, let's tell you what happens in Fire Down Below. Because, listen, it's not what you expect. I know you hear, oh, Steven Seagal movie, he's probably a cop, there's terrorists. No, no, no. This is not the movie you think it is. Here to recap the events of Fire Down Below in 60 seconds or less, it's Camila Adams. And go.
After a fellow EPA agent is found dead, Jack Taggart is sent to Kentucky to investigate. Toxins are being dumped in the abandoned mines. Jack is undercover as a handyman who wears 3/4-length leather coats. He creepily tries to flirt with all female townies until Sarah finally takes the bait. He snoops around, and I think he finds a pot farm, and those dudes are like, fuck, and try to kill him. Then the dudes who killed the other agent also try to kill him, and nobody wants him there really except Sarah and the Reverend, and to be honest, I checked out of this movie early on. So there's some fights, a tiny truck versus a semi, where somehow the semi doesn't win, and Kris Kristofferson is behind it all, and there's some other nonsense with Sarah and her pedophile brother. Kris gets arrested, and Sarah and Jack shack up. That's really the best I can do.
Yeah. The best you can do, and more than it deserves.
I took detailed notes, so I'm happy to fill in any gaps that people need.
I even went to the Wikipedia page to try.
You covered the semi versus truck thing. However many points I end up giving this, they're all for that scene.
I wrote truck exactly. Fight in huge letters in my notebook.
That was great. Like, that was satisfying in every way.
Yes.
And okay. The rest of the movie, not at all.
Listen, spoilers. I am giving this movie a score above 50.
What?
I enjoyed this.
I'm in the low 20s, and I thought I'm being way too nice.
Same.
This is a terrible movie, but it has genuinely great scenes. Like, that truck fight is well done. It is well edited. It is practical effects, which are genuinely stunning.
Right.
And it's also just, like you said, like, how does this little fight with a semi? I think that they make it compelling, you know? Like,
that was like, the most invested. I was more invested in those two characters, the semi and the tiny truck, than I was anybody else in the fucking movie.
I was also invested in the twin townies who work at the store. They should have their own sitcom.
You weren't invested in Harry Dean Stanton, who's IQ rose and dropped as the scene dictated.
He's had a series of head injuries and has been poisoned by coal runoff.
Yeah, but sometimes he's Ben Stiller's Simple Jack from Tropic Thunder,
right.
And sometimes he's just a normal guy.
Yeah.
I don't know what you put in the water that does that.
I fully attributed that to the head injury.
It was a Kaiser Soze thing or whatever. Yeah. It was verbal Kaiser Soze.
So here's the big plot thing that is mystifying. And if you check out even a little bit, you're never going to quite understand it. So he finds out that Marg Helgenberger, his love interest, she's, you know, completely, she's like a black sheep in the town. And it's like, what did she do? And then he goes and looks at microfiche, because this is a movie in the 90s. And the microfiche shows him wildly journalistically inappropriate headline that says 16-year-old murders father. And if you pause it and read the text like I did,
oh, Robin,
you see that the text of the article says that she lit the fire to the mine that killed him. The fire, which is still burning down below in these Kentucky hills, Centralia, PA style. Then.
Okay, go ahead.
Right. So then it's like, well, wait a second. Is she being framed by Kris Kristofferson? Is the mine fire just a regular old mining accident? What's going on? Eventually, you find out that the bad guy from Avatar, her brother, was raping her.
Avatar, thank you.
Her father found out, and the bad guy from Avatar killed him because he was going to stop him from getting to rape his sister. But then Steven Seagal says, yeah, you shot him, and then you convinced her to take the blame. So either the person who mocked up that prop article, which you literally have to pause to read, had a different idea of what the plot was, or Steven Seagal had a different, like, maybe he ad-libbed the thing about shooting someone, but there is a fire down below.
Who's gonna...
It makes more sense if that's relevant to the larger plot, right?
Right. But yeah, I don't know, who was going to tell Steven that he was wrong?
Listener, if you're hearing this, we've had repeated technical difficulties. Camila keeps dropping out. While we see if she returns again, let's knock out the factsy segment, and then we will either continue if she's back or hold and resume later if not. But maximum risk. I'm already screwing it up and switching to Jean-Claude Van Damme. For a reason. Because Fire Down Below was released September 5th, 1997. That is the 24th number one movie of the year. Won its opening weekend with just over $6 million. That is easily the lowest winning total of 1997. The lowest mark to win a weekend. And the previous lowest number was Maximum Risk, the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie we covered a while ago, came out a year earlier and made under $6 million. But those were bordering low watermarks on the chart. There were no other new releases the week of Fire Down Below. The third weekend of G.I. Jane was the runner-up. And in fact, the fifth place finisher, which was week 7 of Con Air, was playing on more screens than Fire Down Below.
Wow.
I mean, if I went to the theater to see Fire Down Below and I was like, oh, I could see Con Air again, though. It was demolished in its second weekend by The Game. David Fincher's The Game debuted the next weekend, $14.3 million. And Fire Down Below fell below G.I. Jane, landing in third. Dropped all the way to 10th in its third weekend. There were a lot of debuts that third weekend, including In and Out and L.A. Confidential. As far as Box Office Mojo is aware, it left theaters then. There are no numbers reported after 3 weeks for Fire Down Below. Camila's back! Maybe. This movie made a total of $16.2 million, only barely cracking the top 100 for the year. It's in 95th place.
Oh, God.
So, see if you can guess. How many Steven Seagal vehicles are number one movies in America?
Under Siege, gotta be.
How many are
there? And I feel like Under Siege 2 probably was as well.
There was
unless
two.
Unless it was released against something else. And
I'm going to say
Executive Decision also
five.
Was. So, I'm going to say 4.
Robin says 4. Camila says 5. It is 7.
Holy cow.
Wow.
Both Hard to Kill and Marked for Death in 1990, Out for Justice in 1991, Under Siege in 1992, On Deadly Ground, which was his directorial debut, where he also plays an environmental agent. It was 1994, Fire Down Below. And finally, cheating a little bit, Exit Wounds, he's not really the star of, but that's certainly his last big theatrical hit in 2001. So surprising seven number ones. That does, of course, pale in comparison to the number of direct-to-video films he's made, starting in 1998 and continuing uninterrupted to this day.
He was in those old man fight movies. He was in those old man action movies, right? The Expendables? Yeah.
I don't think
so. I've only seen the first two, and I don't remember him being in them. And honestly, if you're too toxic to be in the Expendables, yikes.
Right? No, I guess he wasn't.
I think he, you know, finds that, you know, cheap.
It's literally a celebration of what has paid his bills for the last 20
exactly.
years.
I am looking on his IMDb, and there is something called Sheep Impact. How is the Expendables too cheap?
I don't know. Maybe he wants to be the only star. Maybe he doesn't want, you know,
probably. They don't want to call him. I think that those guys, a lot of whom are problematic on their own, are like, we don't want to have that asshole around.
Yeah.
Because this guy is terrible. Like, do you know he's banned from hosting SNL?
Wow.
Oh, we're getting there. That's on the thing. I'm just tossing out a few of my favorite Steven Seagal direct-to-video titles. Today You Die, Mercenary for Justice, Attack Force, Pistol Whipped.
Yes.
Force of X. They're all good. Things are looking a little bit up career-wise, but I still could become a trucker. And I'm so happy that in every truck stop, there's like a thing of seven Steven Seagal movies for if you like need to have it on in the cab when you're just going through Montana and don't even have to turn the wheel. Anyway, so yes, let's get to it. If you didn't know, Steven Seagal is a horrible person. Here is a limited quantity of his offenses, starting with the big one. He has been accused of sexual assault, rape, and harassment, and or not all by everyone, but some of those by at least a dozen actresses, including Portia de Rossi and Jenny McCarthy. He was briefly under suspicion for human trafficking related to such crimes. This one's just funny. He was fined by the SEC for illegally promoting a cryptocurrency. He had a show where he was a reserve cop in real life. He just went off and became a cop called Steven Seagal Lawman. And at one point, wrecked a dude's house and killed that guy's dog because he rolled up with a tank on a suspicion of cockfighting charge. They thought the guy was fighting chickens, and Steven Seagal showed up with a tank and killed the dog. He is noted for striking and abusing stuntmen, which once led legendary grappler and stuntman Gene LaBelle to choke Seagal out until Seagal pooped his pants. That makes it a little better. He broke Sean Connery's wrist while working as a martial arts instructor on Never Say Never Again. He is an outspoken supporter of Vladimir Putin and has been granted Russian citizenship. In fact, Putin has distanced himself from Seagal. Like, when Seagal was going around being like, I consider Vladimir Putin a brother, a Kremlin spokesperson was like, yeah, Putin's not a huge fan, but he's seen some of his movies.
Putin's Vladimir like, keep my name out your like, mouth, is what he's like.
and that's not even all the stuff.
Mafia plot? Do you know about that?
No, that one's new.
He got extorted by the mob, by the Gambino crime family, because Nasso, the other producer on, like, when it starts, it's like a Seagal Nasso production. I don't remember Nasso's first name. But anyway, they were just having contract disputes. And Nasso, like, was like, hey, mob, go step on this guy. You know, Steven Seagal. And they did, because the mafia is fearless, because they're the mafia. And because Steven Seagal is clearly full of shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And he went to prison. Nasso did.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, that's who we're dealing with here. as an antidote, he is frequently cited as the worst Saturday Night Live host of all time. David Spade and Tim Meadows both named Seagal as uniquely terrible, mainly for being completely humorless, being mean to the writers. He refused to do a Hans and Franz sketch because the script would have implied that Hans and Franz could beat up Steven Seagal. So he refused to do the sketch.
Wow.
During a show the following year, Nicolas Cage was hosting and had some bit with Lorne, and Cage said, they probably think I'm the biggest jerk that's ever been on the show. And Lorne said, no, that would be Steven Seagal. 1 year later, still during the height of Steven Seagal. So there was no fear in throwing him under the bus.
So me talking about how I'm fascinated by what a terrible person it is. It's first of all, just that there's, as we've hit just some of the highlights of like how many bad things he's done. But it's also the inconsistency of this guy who he very clearly has a weakness for cultural appropriation, mm-hmm. right? Like starting with martial art and then moving into Native Buddhism American and then fear. Native American stuff and the blues. I don't know if you guys noticed how many songwriting credits he has in the soundtrack for Fire Down Below.
I read that later on after I was like, I was like, I didn't read that right and kept moving.
Nope.
I took
like,
5 points away when he took a guitar and went on stage at the, first of all, this isn't your small town festival. Anyway, go on.
And listen, as a white lady, I understand the appeal of please find me a culture that makes sense to me and is not defined by mediocrity and hatred. But it's problematic. But the thing that is so confusing to me, he also clearly got very, very into environmentalism. If you look at the plot of this, if you look at the plot of Under Siege 2, if you look at the plot of his, what is it called? His, the directorial debut? The only one he ever did.
You know, it's one of them Steven Seagal titles. On Deadly Ground.
On Deadly Ground. Right. So it's like he started caring about the environment. But in this environmentalist movie, he drives a single engine plane and old antique trucks that probably don't get a lot of good gas mileage. You know what I mean? Like, there's just this total inconsistency and incoherency to this guy. And I guess that that's what happens when you have zero moral compass.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, who the but fuck are you, dude?
Like, but think you should. So you're like, well, Buddha says, shut up. It's you're fine. I mean, you're not. You're the worst person in the world. But you're not going to change that now by that. But you're right. Even in this movie, like, the environmental message of this movie is spot on. And like 15 years early, like way ahead of the curve on, that's an oversimplification. There were certainly, you know, a green movement in the 90s, but like, this is the fracking debate early, particularly with, you know, they're going to come into your small town and give you a little bit of money so that they can change the regulations and do whatever they want. That would become a story 15 years later. It's a remarkably agreeable environmental premise being given by a super beast.
Yes. I do want to say that after this movie was over, I did search YouTube to watch the opening credits of Captain Planet and the Planeteers.
Right.
Because that fight in the mine where there are those buckets of Kool-Aid, just bright green juice, just flowing abundantly, because it's always a little unclear exactly what pollutant they're talking about, right? Uh-huh. Like, and again, because I'm me, I was like Googling like waste products of coal mining to like see specifically what it was that they were having dumped into their water. But it's certainly not that, like this cartoon pollution.
Yeah, I want to start dropping in some of my favorite ridiculous Letterboxd lists that our movies appear on.
Oh, sweet.
And there are two for Fire Down Below. One is films with neon green fluid in them.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. Glowing neon green fluid. But my favorite is movies whose full and correct titles can be pronounced perfectly in the part of burning down the house where they scream burning down the house.
Fire yeah. down below.
Yay!
Some good ones on here. Fiddler on the Roof, Bringing Out the Dead, Malcolm and Marie.
I would like to meet this person. Put this together.
Good news. Steven Seagal has 9 Razzie nominations and 1 win, including 4 for this film. The win is Worst Director for On Deadly Ground. Listen, if we're going to blast the Razzies all the time, we have to nod when they get it right. No complaints. No complaints for those nominations.
No, not at all.
And finally, before Steven Seagal was on board, Bruce Willis was attached as the lead. And it was more of a detective movie than an action movie. They wanted him. He said, no, I'm not. I'm good.
Damn it. Like, I think this could have been a good movie.
I think it, no.
I can't go that far with it.
Okay, but can we talk about, I have a few things I have in my,
absolutely.
I took like 5 pages of notes.
Oh my God.
Can we talk about the first seconds of this film?
This is a terrible way to start a movie.
I I was baffled. I was like, am I watching the wrong movie? It's like these sepia tone photographs of people in Appalachia with like twangy guitar. And then it's like I felt like we were watching a sequel.
Right. This is previously
movie
on.
We never saw.
Previously on Fire Down Below.
Truly. There's like this whole plot, which I assume was originally meant to be part of the movie proper. And then they edited it down because this movie is overly long.
Right.
But like uncredited John Deal is like, yeah, I'll see you when I see you. And then he is killed off screen.
That's unfair. Because, I mean, why bring him in?
Right.
That's in the IMDb trivia. Wait. Quoting directly from IMDb trivia, take it with the appropriate grain of salt because it's user-generated. Warner Brothers wanted to make sure that Fire Down Below has the same fast pace and short running time as all the other Steven Seagal films he made for them. So they heavily re-edited the movie and deleted a lot of the plot and character scenes. But they also removed several big action sequences.
Really?
They did basically cut a long opening action sequence involving Taggart and Frank. Frank had more scenes that were removed, and they just edited things into the opening credits while he flew that plane forever. But other deleted action sequences include really big and complicated chase scene, which took place at night in the woods and hills. It involved police cars chasing tanker trucks full of toxic waste, which eventually crashes into a train on the river bridge. Taggart kills another corrupt FBI agent by burning him alive in the gas station explosion. So the explosion we never got did happen. You just didn't get to see it. Apparently some of those scenes are in the trailers.
Oh, wow. Because I was like, did they just run out of money and they couldn't make it look good? So they cut it from the thing. But no, they filmed it and then cut it. Maybe because it didn't look good.
Maybe.
Apparently it looked fine. It was just way too damn long.
Oh, wow.
To cut across the board.
Release the Snyder Cut. Fire Down Below. One of those inexplicable photographs is of a black family praying at their dinner table. And then you do not see another black human being until like the second to last scene of the movie.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry, wasn't Kris Kristofferson's disposable mistress black?
At least.
So, you know, worse than not being there.
And right.
Just the way that they depict Appalachia here, although I was impressed that Steven Seagal correctly pronounced that. But it just, like, what did I write in my notes? I had something clever. Oh, I said it makes Hillbilly Elegy look like Coal Miner's Daughter.
Yeah. Listen, I know that every movie that involves a guy coming from out of town into the has to be kind of about, like, will they accept him? Won't they accept him? Steven Seagal in this town looks like a moose at the Starbucks.
Yes.
Like, he is so out of place that it calls into question any... I don't care if it's the EPA, the FBI, it could be the traffic department. Anyone is going to say, well, we can't send him. They're
right.
Never going to talk to him.
Exactly. Like, first
anybody
of,
else.
Like, also, why does everybody in that town need a new porch?
I don't understand. Like, it's like, this is what I was baffled by. I was like, okay, so we send him in as a handyman. Like, aren't these people manual laborers by trade? Like, don't you think that if they need shit fixed around their home, they can do it?
I mean, I don't know how to mine coal or build porches, but I feel like there are a lot of overlapping skills.
Right. And it's like, I feel like this is a kind of a town that has very little to begin with. So someone somewhere along the line, someone's going to be like, you know what? I'm going to figure out how to do some carpentry. So, I mean.
And that'll be my job that will get me out of the mines. Good for me.
Right. I'm just. Like, first of all, him being like the biggest sore thumb, this moose in a coffee shop situation where, first of all, like, he absolutely has to be in like some backwoods somewhere for anybody to refer to him as, quote, pretty boy. So what? So he takes a shower. So that makes him a pretty boy. And then the way that he interacts with all the women, like, is the same line with whether she's 30 or 12. That's a nice name. Sir, I'm going to need you to fucking bring it back down a couple notches and stop trying to lick every woman that comes past. It's just, he's so creepy.
I have a lot of notes early on, and then I paused it because I picked up my phone for something, and I stopped on Camila, who's frozen again. Oh. I stopped on Camila's post that she made about the Friends reunion, which I recommend following Camila on Twitter anyway, but look for that.
Oh, I haven't read it yet. I missed it. I have to read it. I'm excited.
And well, yeah, that's why I paused the thing, read that, and then looked up and found that we were 17 minutes into the movie and just really broke down at that point. And this was after I wrote, don't remind me that I could be watching Deliverance right now. Don't like name check a much better version of kind of the thing you're doing.
Welcome back, Camila.
This is much like as I was watching Fire Down Below, I was watching on Vudu, and at some point Vudu was like, no, and just stopped and was like, you're better than this. I've seen your history. Like, I can't let you in all good conscience go on and finish this movie.
Are you telling me I didn't need to pay for this? Because I did.
Oh, I did pay for it. Yeah. In more ways than Vudu, one.
You said Vudu and I thought Tubi. Ah. Here is my central objection, besides it being long and dumb and boring. Beyond all that, an hour of this movie is taken, more than that, the majority of this movie is taking up with trying to find where they're doing the dumping.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the giant trucks and helicopters. You are in the middle of nowhere. There is no heavy machinery. You could hear someone starting up a dump truck 20 miles away. Yeah. Just wait until night and see where the helicopter goes and where the giant truck noise is coming from. It's over there.
That's a great point. I don't understand. Well, I mean, Appalachia's gonna Appalachia. I don't know. I don't even think I said that right.
But then we wouldn't have time for a dumb father-son subplot where trying to impress his daddy.
So many things. And like, once you thought the damn thing was going to be over, it's like, it just kept going. There was like, oh, we got one more thing to do. Oh, wait, Steven's going to do one more thing. Oh, wait, one more thing. It was unnecessary. There was so much that just... Steven Seagal, never again, I hope. Now, I will happily veto any other Steven Seagal movie that comes across this thing.
Yeah, you have a trigger finger. Quick trigger finger for Steven Seagal-related vetoes.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe that should just be built in, just an automatic.
Yeah. I gotta say, like, listen, everything you both have said, you're totally right.
I can't, but you had fun.
I still cannot give a movie where two trucks get into a fight less than a 50. I just realized that kind of is the plot of every Transformers movie.
Yeah, I guess
those are robots in disguise.
Yeah, those are robots. Thank you. That's right. Possibly aliens, possibly robots. We don't even know. But these are two literal trucks, and they have a fight. This movie gets a 50.
Did you, like, were you just absolutely tickled to see Steven in this tiny truck? Like, he was just like... the visual is extremely comical, and I can't believe that he didn't take a look and was like, you know, with his big ego and everything, but you know, this doesn't bode well for my tough guy persona. not like my fringy 3/4 length jackets.
Oh, his jackets, like,
Technicolor dream coats.
Something to behold.
I'm assuming he just shows up on set in his own wardrobe in all movies.
So he wrote a novel in 2017.
Stop it. Stop.
It's about a Native American cop who can, like, astral project as a wolf and who exposes some plot by the deep state.
Simultaneously, like, that's terrible. And I'm like, but if you handed it to me, I'd probably read it. I'm not going to give him any money, but if you're like, here.
Yep. And he appears on the cover of this book wearing a jacket just like his fringed camel-colored jacket in this movie. Could be the same one.
The biggest laugh I got out of this whole thing was that at some point Steven is shooting something and Dan hollers, somebody help! There's a Native American pimp shooting up the plane!
Remember when he's like, your ancestors will be mad at you if you let them rape your land. And I'm like, these white people's ancestors?
Your granddaddy didn't die in that coal mine so that you would also die just outside of that coal mine. I liked Steven Seagal for 4 seconds. It's when the big dumb guy said, you came this close to having me stomp your ass. And then Steven just smiles with such genuine joy. Like, he's like, oh, is that so, big fella? Like that, I was okay. Good, great.
Colin,
that's why you
recognized that big fella as the
Ocean's
like the
11
heavy in Ocean's 11. Yep.
I first called out. I was like, "Hey, Boondock Saints." I was like, "No, that's not right." He was in Ocean's 11.
I think he's in both. He has like a million credits.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, I mean, you're 7'8".
Right, exactly.
Look like that. Hollywood's going to call
at
on
least,
you.
At least there's fire and a truck falls really slowly down the mountain and it's, you know, Levon Helm's there.
Harry Dean what Stanton do they does a little jig.
Yeah. He plays the banjo for a little bit at the end credits. What did they burn the church down with? Napalm? It was like... Did you bathe the thing in kerosene, like in a big tub for 8 hours and then light it? Jeez. we're nitpicking now. It's bad.
Why pick the nits when there's such clear structural problems? Maybe because one of the people on this podcast is holding firm in giving this movie a positive score.
Let's hear that score.
Yeah.
Originally, I was going to go 51. You talked me down to a solid 50.
That's still, I feel like that's extremely generous. But if you had fun, this brought you some sort of enjoyment, then go forth with your 50.
I'm staying at 22. 27, every single one of those points were for the truck chase. And then I started at 27 for the trucks, took 5 away for the guitar. 22.
And I am at your 27.
All right.
It's all for the trucks, the truck scene, and the fact that, I don't know, they managed to complete a movie? I don't know.
I mean, they apparently completed a movie and a half and then had to edit half of it away. I think it was the AV Club used to do great scene, terrible movie, and that truck scene is a perfect example for that. Like, to the point where I'm like, I want to see if maybe somebody actually wrote it up for that.
Maybe.
33 is the final score. No, that's not going to flirt with the bottom of the list. I mean, it's down there, but we've had worse. We've had worse. To a new bingo card. Camila, take us through the newest version.
Yay! So we still got some of the same stuff. I remember to put Tony Goldwyn Free Space back on here. And new, we have Character Has a Tattoo. A movie has a current Rotten Tomatoes score less than 50%. Cigarette smoking and alcohol consumption are some new ones. And, you know, the ones that we haven't knocked off yet are things like Scene in the Library, Woman Director, Bike, Skateboard, and Roller Skates, etc.
Fantastic.
Well, you can certainly knock off movie has a current Rotten Tomatoes score less than 50%.
Yeah, boy.
And don't even think about Library. No, that's not true. The microfiche.
The microfiche.
Holy shit. Even, wow, who would have thunk that this would be the movie to give us a library scene?
Exactly.
You know what? Bingo.
Wait, for real?
How?
If I'm correct, I have a straight line. Rotten Tomatoes score less than 50%. Scene in Library. Alcohol consumption.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
And live stage show. Do you count the country band?
Yeah.
That's a bingo.
Damn. Wow. That's the second time we've completed one in one day.
Great. All right. Camille and I both have our second vetoes.
All right. Two more vetoes.
Thank goodness.
Two more Steven Seagal movies we don't need to watch. Just remember, at any given draw, it's 6 times more likely that we get another Steven Seagal movie than Titanic. Just think.
So I'm just going to throw a guess as to what area our next movie is going to be, because this one was connected with Hero through like martial arts kind of stuff. So next one, I'm going to say we're going to be connected by Backwoods.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, time for more Middle America stuff.
Right. So that's where I'm going.
Hey, Coal Miner's Daughter is on the list. You Can't Handle the Truth. Camila, during one of your short circuits, Robin said she had something to say.
All right.
I watched most of Saint Maud. Have you guys seen this movie?
No.
No.
I'm not familiar.
You have to watch it. You have to watch it so I have someone who I can talk to about it. It's only on Amazon for 9 more days.
Oh, what is it about? It's a horror movie?
It's a horror movie. It's a slow burn. It's A24.
Oh.
It reminds me a lot of The Witch. And you have to watch it so we can talk about it.
Okay, it's on Amazon Prime?
Yep,
okay.
But it's only there for like a week.
All right, I will do that tonight.
And it's also only 84 minutes long. I
love
it. When I said I've watched most of it, because things got so scary And then while, like, right after things were getting, like, outrageously scary, a house centipede crawled across the front of my couch. And I just ran upstairs.
It's like, and we're done.
And I was like, well, I'm done for the night. And then right before we started this call, I put the end on again to be like, all right, I'm going to finish it. And immediately was like, nope, I'm too scared, even though it's broad daylight.
Wow. All right. Let me get into that.
Yeah. Slow burn to start. But like, it will get there. Nice. And it's only 84 minutes long.
I feel bad that I didn't see it earlier. That was a full year delayed kind of a thing. That was supposed to come out in spring of 20. And I was pumped for it. I remember seeing the trailer and bookmarking it in my brain and just didn't watch it. So I will. Camila.
Nothing really new. I think I finally watched The United States versus Billie Holiday and The King of Staten Island, which both I enjoyed, and I was surprised how much I really liked The King of Staten Island and how beloved I now find Pete Davidson. I don't
that's nice.
Like, I never really had anything bad to say about him before, but he just didn't seem like my cup of tea. But this movie kind of really got me into the camp, I guess, ish. Camp adjacent. Pete Davidson, camp adjacent. It's like, all right, I'm glad that, you know, you're doing well. And I don't know. I didn't look to see, like, did he write this or?
It's loosely based on his life. I don't think he wrote it, but I think he was involved in the story process.
Gotcha. Either way, it was very enjoyable. I had a lot of laugh out loud moments. And I also would like to point out a very excellent usage of One Headlight by the Wallflowers.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was perfect. Like, it was a really good film about people and character development and things like that.
What'd you think of Billie Holiday? Because I can't complain about Andra Day, but I found the movie completely unremarkable.
Thank you. Yeah, same. Like, I really enjoyed Andra Day's performance, and I thought she did a great job. But the movie in itself, it just seemed really disjointed and just kind of choppy. And, like, they didn't know, there were too many people involved in the editing and the directing process. Like, something was amiss along there. But I mean, it's still an okay watch just to watch Andra, which have been sleeping on her for like a long, long time. I didn't even know like she was as great as she was. I have a gig like doing some freelance writing, and I had to write a piece about her, and that thus made me watch the film. And then it took me down the rabbit hole of like watching these YouTube videos that she started off doing, like covers of Muse and like other amazing bands and stuff, and just like listening to her whole album, which is great. So I'm like an Andra Day stan now.
Let's talk about A Quiet Place Part Two briefly. No spoilers. I'd imagine, Camila, you haven't seen it yet.
Not yet.
I enjoyed it. This is another one of those movies that's getting a lot of people back to theaters, and good for them. Go and have a good time. It's scary. It's tense. Sure. This is just so barely a movie. It's 97 minutes. And again, I love short movies, but break it down. It's 97 minutes long, incredibly long credits for some reason. So it's like 89 minutes long. 20 of those are a flashback to before the first movie. So they've got about an hour of new stuff here. And fundamentally, that's like, this isn't a spoiler, it's in the trailers. They leave and they go to another place where Cillian Murphy is, and that's about it. There's a little dilemma they have to, she's trying to get, you know, find a way to make, broadcast the sound that makes the monsters mad. But there's so little action here that it's like, oh, this is part two because you're making a trilogy. Mm-hmm. Like, you are so determined to make a trilogy that you made, no, you did not move this story along. I still think it's a good movie, barely. I think it just kind of inches to worth seeing. And if you want to, you know, make this the movie that gets you to go back to the movie theater because you're vaccinated and you want that experience, great. But middle chapter problems.
I didn't know Cillian Murphy was in it. I kind of haven't really been paying attention to the hype about A Quiet Place 2 because I knew I wasn't going to go to the theater to watch it.
He's I was good. Surprised he was out already. I was like, oh, wow, okay.
I've been talking about it for like 8 years.
I know, right?
It's the biggest opening since before the pandemic. I'm sure. Things are back. Stomped on Cruella. Cruella is, you know, it's there. Looks great. I've started the Oscars death race because Quiet Place Part Two is definitely a sound nominee, and Cruella is definitely a costume and hairstyling and makeup nominee. Yeah. It's fine. It's just for nobody. It's a dark PG-13 movie, so it's a little too scary for the whole family, but teens are going to be too cool and not want to go see a Disney movie, and, you know, it's a fairly narrow appeal. I guess my recommendation, let's go deep. My recommendation is the 1942 screwball comedy, I Married a Witch. If you have already watched WandaVision and need more domestic witchery, it's on Criterion, and I just picked it up because it was at the exchange, and, you know, I was like, oh, a cheap enough Criterion Blu-ray, sure. And it stars Veronica Lake as an ancient witch that tries to make a mortal man fall in love with her, and he does, but then she drinks the potion, and it's hilarious and charming, and Veronica Lake is such a star. Mm. Oh, it's a great time. I loved it. And in this movie about witches, someone makes a car fly, and then the car crashes into a gnarled old tree. J.K. Rowling stole everything.
Wow.
And Train to Busan, I'm not going to... Everyone in the world has seen Train to Busan, and I only just got it because it was on Joe Bob this week, so that's a movie nerd failure by me, but it's perfect. Camila, have you seen that?
I have not. Train to Busan?
That's the
no.
Korean zombie movie where they're all trapped on a commuter train. And...
No. I think it's been like in a queue somewhere for the longest time, or on a list or something.
It's one of those.
Right.
That was around the same time as Snowpiercer, too. Mm. And so I'm like,
What's going on with them in trains?
Right.
Hate the trains. They're really nervous about trains over there.
We're just jealous because they have trains.
Yeah.
Right.
We're stuck in our car traffic, jealous of...
Going from one city to another in a train in an hour? What are you talking about? Let's draw a movie. And I maintain, you know, it doesn't get a whole lot better in terms of draws for this show than Fire Down Below, as much as I did not have a great time watching it. That's the kind of thing I'm looking for. Will I feel that way about Fight Club? Yeah, pretty much.
It's happening! Camila is doing a full body dance of joy.
It's, you know, yes! because you usually get adjacent to a movie. You usually, you know, you get Jurassic Park 2 or something. You know, it's not, you don't usually hit those bullseyes.
Oh my God. No. Thanks, Tony. This is to make it up for everything.
Yeah, Tony knew that we had a rough recording.
Right.
We needed a gift.
Yes.
Aside from it being one of Camila's favorite movies, what a good topic to dive into Fincher again. I know we've done a 7 episode, but to kind of examine the way I should save this for next week, but my uncle, who's a professor and teaches, you know, some intro to film classes, eventually banned Fight Club as an essay topic because too many people were missing the point. he was getting too many, like, Fight Club is a movie that is about two people who did something great. No.
What it really is a movie to highlight Brad Pitt's devil horns.
Well, I can't wait. That's going to be awesome.
Good times. We can move the recording up. I mean,
let's do it now. Let's do it now. I'll keep my babysitter here for like
2.5 hours.
Yeah. Well, won't that be a good time? And I promise a better score than the 33 we gave Fire Down Below for Fight Club.
I'm just giving it. I'm just giving my score.
This is probably what's going to make 7 not be in 7th anymore.
Maybe
it might.
And that's a good thing.
Taken out by Fincher. Fincher on Fincher crime.
If it has to happen someday, this is a way for it to happen that feels right.
Yes.
We didn't expect it. Fincher was the tie because Fire Down Below was kicked out of number one by The Game.
There you go.
Tough. Nice.
Working hard. Well, before we visit with Meatloaf and all the rest, I think of Meatloaf really quickly when I think about Fight Club. I think more immediately than most people do.
He's got his bitch tits.
Yeah. Fire Down Below was the number one movie in America in September 5th was the release date, 1997. What was the number one song in America?
I'm going to play the rules and say Mariah Carey.
Not Mariah Carey.
Okay. Not Mariah Carey. Somebody once told me.
little early for Smash Mouth. One in several different ways.
So wait, 97. Was it Toni Braxton?
No. One guy dominated the charts in 1997 in a few different ways.
One guy.
Oh, Puff Daddy.
Oh.
Well, yes, but that's not who we're looking for.
Is this Biggie?
Yes. I say dominated in a couple different ways, either by having the hits
97?
Or having
97? Wasn't he dead?
Hypnotize?
Hypnotize was a number one in 97, but that's not what we're looking for. Hypnotize was number one in the summer. 2 months later, I'll Be Missing You by Puff Daddy about Biggie would be number one, because this is when he died. But okay. Immediately after that, he went back to the top with...
One More Chance?
No, you're an album early.
So this, whatever it was, came out after he died.
Yes. On the album... appropriately titled Life After Death.
Right.
A formative song for me in this bright colored music video featuring two of the people that we've mentioned already, and also a third guy who's...
Well, it's featuring Diddy and Mace.
Oh, is it
and
Mo Money Mo Problems?
Correct.
Okay. I think in my brain that is a Puff Daddy song.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
He comes in first. No, that is the second single off of... I know way more about Notorious B.I.G. than most other rappers. That's the second single after Hypnotize off of Life After Death.
Okay.
It's Biggie featuring Puff Daddy and Mace.
Yeah, not something I would imagine coming from your canon of knowledge, Sean.
So it was a formative song for me. Had that cassette. No, I had that CD. That might have been the first CD single I ever bought.
Oh, man, CD singles. Not very environmentally friendly.
No, but R.I.P.
One of my big I feel old moments was, you know, in that song he sings, 10 years from now, we'll still be on top. And in 2017, I went to tweet like, whoop, he was wrong. And then I was like, it's been 20 years. It 20
yeah,
years.
Yep. So, wow, you missed the mark.
Oh, my God.
He wasn't on top in 2007, okay? He was on middle.
Middle at best. This is a 24-year-old complaint. Mace, I know that you're just happy to be there, but you stop rapping when the hook begins. You don't get another half a line because you felt like saying another thing. Anyway, it's a great song. It's a great song. Great video.